Welcome back to the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. Earlier in the show, we talked about calls to remove statues of non-Confederate figures in our history, including a group of students at UW-Madison who want the university to remove a statue of Abraham Lincoln. This comes after another statue depicting Lincoln in Boston was removed. But there's a more controversial figure that is also displayed around the land of Lincoln, Lincoln's opponent in the 1858 debates for U.S. Senate, Stephen Douglas. Last week, Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan announced he would like the portrait of Douglas and a possible in the Illinois House chamber and a statue of him outside the Capitol to be removed. At Eastern Illinois University, a former professor is calling on the school to rename a residence hall known as Douglas Hall. And at the University of Chicago, the university has removed a plaque depicting Douglas. The school's president, Robert Zimmer, wrote, "Douglas does not deserve to be honored on our campus because he, quote, profited from his wife's ownership of a Mississippi plantation where black people were enslaved," unquote. But our next guests say that the University of Chicago has not gone far enough, that what they hope to see on campus goes beyond the removal of the plaque. Guy Emerson Mount is a professor in the Department of History at Auburn University. He earned his PhD from the University of Chicago, where he was part of the Reparations at UChicago Working Group. Also joining us is the current PhD student in the Department of History at Chicago, Kane Jordan. He's also a member of the Reparations Working Group. Both of you, welcome to the 21st.
Thank you.
And we want to invite our listeners to join the conversation. You can give us a call, 800-222-9455. If you have thoughts you want to share about some of the troubling aspects of certain historical figures in Illinois, give us a call to 800-222-9455. Professor Emerson Mount, I want to begin with you. You write that, in short, the University of Chicago owes its entire presence to its past with slavery. And this starts with Stephen Douglas. Can you explain Stephen Douglas's ties to slavery and his connection to the University of Chicago?
Sure. So Stephen Douglas owned a 3,000-acre cotton plantation in Lawrence County, Mississippi, under his wife's name and under the law of coverture at the time. It was effectively his personal private property to do whatever he wanted to with. What he did do was extract the labor, the wealth from the bodies of the enslaved peoples in Lawrence County, Mississippi, use that money to build a huge real estate empire on the north side of, or on the south side of Chicago. And eventually he donated 10 acres of that land to start the University of Chicago as its initial founding endowment in 1856. And so roughly a third of the enslaved peoples were literally worked to death on his plantation. And so that's why if you work through the institutional history of the University of Chicago, it simply doesn't exist without slavery, the profits from slavery, and the funneling of those profits through Stephen A. Douglas.
Can you help us understand, because I think if somebody were to Google the University of Chicago's website right now, they would see 1890 is the date that the university asserts is when it was created. So can you draw the map, connect us to Douglas's earlier donation and how that is, in your view, in fact, the seed for what is the current University of Chicago?
Sure. And all the best peer-reviewed research, including the very dean of the University of Chicago, Dean Boyer's work, all kind of point to 1856 as the actual founding. And the interesting thing is the 1890 founding is actually, which has always been characterized as a refounding, a reinstitutionalization, a continuation of the Bronzeville campus. So the best way for listeners to kind of think about this is the University of Chicago had a Bronzeville campus that started in 1856. Continued for 20, 30 some odd years, had various iterations, the Divinity School. It's a complicated institutional history that we might not have time to get into, but eventually all of the donor networks, all of the trustees, all of the alumni of that original institution in Bronzeville are also considered part of the current University of Chicago that exists today on the Hyde Park campus. So there's basically two campuses and one university is the best way to think about it. And this is not uncommon for other institutions. Princeton University, for example, used to be called the University of New Jersey. It was originally in Newark, and now it moved campuses to Princeton. So this is very common, but it's curious because the University of Chicago is the only institution that kind of keeps time this way. And what the institution, so the administration's current position is that the university is effectively reducible to its most recent legal entity rather than its first legal entity. So every other university around the nation, when they list their founding date, they count their first legal incorporation, their first legal entity. In this case, the University of Chicago was called the University of Chicago. But the University of Chicago, because of these ties to slavery, and this goes back to the very beginning, early donors to the institution were always kind of leery because they were Northern donors. And so a lot of them were abolitionists, and they were very, very worried, including Rockefeller himself, of being associated with Douglass and his slaveholding. So what a lot of them did was they had a separate account for the Divinity School, for example. So the Divinity School at UChicago actually celebrates a different founding than the university writ large. And that's because they tie their institutional history back to this original rift, basically, between Douglass and the abolitionist donors of the institution. So this has been a process of erasure that the university has been engaged in since its initial entanglements with Douglass to try to distance themselves from it. So that's why the 1890 bit exists. And incidentally, the University of Chicago has someone on staff that actually edits that Wikipedia page. Whenever people try to update it with current information and most recent scholarship, they summarily erase it because they're literally to erase this history of the 1850s.
Yeah. And before I bring Kane Jordan into the conversation, I just want to pause on what you said there, because I think this is a really interesting point, is that, I mean, we're familiar with the companies today trying to distance themselves from, you know, past ties to slavery, or maybe now more institutions are acknowledging it, as we saw with Georgetown a few years ago. But you're saying that this was a concern even in the 1890s for the University of Chicago. Fascinating.
And even Dean Boyer, I'm looking at his piece right now, actually calls it the successor institution. That, you know, the current iteration, the current legal entity is a successor institution. That's a phrase that's also used with these insurance companies that all have successor institutions. They're real kind of foundings. And it's time. It's time for the University of Chicago to acknowledge its full history, stop erasing its past. And in an interesting way, when the statue was taken down, the president actually said, President Zimmer actually said there was, quote, no connection between Douglass and the current University of Chicago, which makes no sense because, of course, the statue itself is a connection and this entire history is a connection. So it's that kind of acknowledgement, non-acknowledgement, that kind of erasure through acknowledgement that's happening right now.
Kane Jordan, I want to ask you, what was your reaction to, as I quoted earlier from University President Robert Zimmer's comments, Douglass does not deserve to be honored on our campus because he profited from his wife's ownership of a Mississippi plantation where black people were enslaved. Kane, what was your reaction to that announcement?
Well, my reaction was, who asked for this? the people that we've been talking to within the community around the University of Chicago, whenever we asked them about sort of the reparations project that we were doing, they always said that they needed housing because the rents were going up because of university projects. They always said that they needed some sort of space because a lot of them could only sort of hold events in churches and a lot of the public spaces were being exhausted, including by the, you know, sort of new Obama library project. So that's what a lot of people were, including also sort of better transportation. So a lot of people were thinking about these particular things and thinking about how the university could become a better community partner. And in that, the thing is, there are a lot of people, you know, even around the university that have never been on the university campus. So it's interesting because, like, this could not have been for a lot of those people. It couldn't have been for them because some of them haven't even, you know, gone on the university campus. And in fact, they are, terrorized, but very much under surveillance by the University of Chicago Police Department, which is one of the largest police departments in the world, private police forces in the world. So yeah, it was just like, that was my initial question. I was just like, who asked for the plaque to come down? Because it wasn't us. And we were the ones that, you know, myself Guy Emerson Mount and Kai Parker, who is also a professor, but at the University of Virginia. We were the ones that did sort of the initial research that led to, you know, this discovery of this slave-filled past. So we weren't credited, by the way, which, you know, as scholars, we kind of don't like that. that was kind of my initial reaction. I was confused, however, this does as Guy sort of alluded to, this does open a window for the university to become a better community partner, and we hope that they will take this chance.
So, Professor Emerson Mount, I understand you would like to see reparations. We've heard some of, you know, just some discussion about the university having a better relationship with its community. I wonder, how do you define reparations in this context?
So we at the Reparations at UChicago Working Group, we are of the position that reparations is a revolutionary praxis and an ongoing process that's basically dictated by those who have been harmed, who have the responsibility to decide what constitutes repair for that harm. And so we've always said that rather than impose a particular kind of model, the United Nations, for example, has a very specific model, in this case particularly because slavery is a crime against humanity. And according to the United Nations, crimes against humanity have no statute of limitations. And the UN has a particular set of processes that you're supposed to follow to how to repair a crime against humanity. But we think that has to emerge from communities on the ground that have been demanding particular things from the University of Chicago for generations. And Kane mentioned many of them. The CBA for the Obama Presidential Library is a preemptive, reparative gesture that people in the community have been demanding. The abolishment or the defunding and the disarming of the University of Chicago's police department is something that multiple community organizations on the south side of Chicago have been demanding, again, as a reparative gesture for the harm that the university has contributed to. And so we see the harm kind of beginning with slavery, but it certainly doesn't end there. It's a long, continuous story of the university benefiting from slavery, trying to erase that history of benefiting from slavery, financially supporting restrictive covenants and building the Jim Crow regime that continues to dominate the south side of Chicago, and then continuing through the University of Chicago's police force. There's a straight line there that communities have been protesting constantly, and the university just summarily ignores them and goes about on its mission. So for us, the first step in reparations is understanding that there has been harm, understanding there's a need and a responsibility to repair that harm, and then listening to those who have been harmed, who get to decide and determine this question of what constitutes reparations.
Kane Jordan, we've only got a couple of minutes left, but I wonder, as you know, the University of Chicago is not the first elite institution to have benefited from slavery. Georgetown, as I said earlier, acknowledged it was built in part by slave labor. I wonder if there are institutions you view as an example of doing it right, you know, as a model that the University of Chicago might look to address reparations.
I mean, I think that sort of the Georgetown model, this is so funny, we've talked about this, Guy and I. The Georgetown model is interesting. The fact that they are allowing the descendants of the enslaved to come to the university, for free or reduced tuition. I do think that is. That is interesting. However, we're trying to really carve out something on our own. So I think that the University of Chicago has a very particular, as Guy had laid out, it has a very particular kind of relationship with the surrounding community. And I think that this needs to be done very specifically and in consultation with these particular community groups and everyone from Kenwood Oakland Community Organization on down. It sort of needs to be like a process of the university listening to these particular community groups and then, listening to them, having them sort of acknowledge the harm that has happened, and then moving forward to no longer have that harm repeated. This has been going on, you know, really since 1856.
And we're going to have to leave the conversation there, I'm afraid. Kane Jordan is a PhD student in the Department of History at the University of Chicago, and Guy Emerson Mount is a professor at the Auburn University Department of History. He earned his PhD from UChicago. Thank you both for being with us today. And that is all the time we have for our program. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.